everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This guy over here, that is Nick Wright. We got a fun show for you today. Baker Mayfield continues to wow his teammates. Kevin Durant is big bad, and thank God it's Thursday. That's where we will start. Thursday Night Football on Fox. Great NFC showdown. Vikings heading to L.A. to take on the 3-0 Rams. Kirk Cousins and company looking to improve to 2-1-1 on the season. The always popular 2-1-1. While Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, and the rest of those Rams and the high-powered offense look to cement their place as the best team in the NFL. We will preview this matchup, but not before Rams head coach Sean McVay takes a stab at it. Take a listen.
This week provides a great challenge, going against an excellent team, really sound in all three phases. They have great players. They're very well coached. Team that went deep into the playoffs last year, and they're going to be ready to go, and certainly we have too as well.
They're a great football team. They've played a really high level of football as of late, playoff team from last year. They're well coached. You have great players. They can beat you a number of ways, and so we understand we've got to play our best football to be able to come out of there with a win.
This is a great way for Fox to kick off NFL Thursday. This is a great one. What do you think of the key to this matchup, C?
Well, anytime you're facing a team, if you want to start with the Vikings and their defense, which has been a dominant defense, not last season, but since Zimmer's been there, especially the last five seasons, Nick is very notable as far as they've been a top five defense, very consistent, not only against the run, but also against the pass. If you're going to start with the Rams, how are you going to slow down that high-powered offense of them? You got to play great red zone defense, all right, because they're going to get some yards on you. They have too many players. They have run a great system. They confuse the defense an awful lot. So you can expect from the 25-yard line to the opposing 25-yard line, they're going to get some yards. Don't get too frustrated. How many times, if they get into the red zone, say six times, can you hold them half the time to field goals? And that's what the Vikings, their challenge will be. If they get there four times, can you hold them two times to field goals? If you can do that, then the Vikings have a chance. On the other side, the injuries that they have, they have so many, and just like the game I covered last week, the only reason why New Orleans wins that game, because all the injuries, and Atlanta didn't have enough bodies to be able to throw at them. If I'm the Vikings, I go with three, four wide receiver sets. I stress Wade Phillips and that defense out. They're making wholesale substitutions. Both their cornerbacks are going to be out of the game, and there's not enough time for the fifth, the sixth, they're going to have to sign someone off the practice squad, get someone off the street. There's not enough time to prepare for a very, very extensive game plan for these younger and inexperienced players. So not only are they younger and inexperienced, but they're also not as talented. So Wade Phillips is not going to be playing a lot of man-to-man. So those are the keys to the Vikings. You got to play really good defense in the red zone, and you got to take advantage of the injuries that the Rams have, because I don't think there will be another game where you're going to face both of the starting cornerbacks where they're not going to play.
And when they're both premier corners, some of the center points of their defense, much like when the Broncos had Aqib Talib and Chris Harris, when Talib was probably a better player than he is now, and now the Rams have Aqib Talib as their secondary corner and Marcus Peters, and both of them going to be out for tonight's game. Big picture-wise, I think a lot of people are going to focus on Kirk Cousins, who had awful ball security last week. It was one of the underrated parts of that game. It's not the interceptions. Yeah, he had one, but it's the three fumbles. I'm going to talk about a guy that could cause those fumbles, because there is one guy that could ruin this game for the Minnesota Vikings, and that guy is Aaron Donald. You said before the year, before the Vikings suffered some offensive line injuries, and I know Pat Eflin's going to be back this week, he played a little bit last week, that the Vikings offensive line was the one spot on their team that you had real concerns about when you look at the whole 53-man roster. Well, Aaron Donald is still Aaron Donald. And Aaron Donald up against the guard-center-guard combo of that Vikings offensive line, if they cannot handle him, if he gets pressure on Kirk Cousins up the middle, which then is going to obviously flush him out to the side, which is where Anthony Barr or Kendricks or any of the Vikings, Danielle Hunter, any of those guys can really damage you. Any of the Rams defenders out there on the edge can go out and get you. That's where I think the game can be ruined for the Minnesota Vikings. If Aaron Donald dominates his spot up the middle, which he does so often, and that is the weakest spot on their team. That's an area that they have to prevent that from happening. If they do that, I like their chances on being able to do exactly what Chris is talking about. Take advantage of the young corners. Take advantage of the lesser players on the outside with Diggs and Thielen. But Donald can ruin that entirely himself.
I know we're saying, yeah, Kirk Cousins has to have a better game than he did last week. This is why you went out and you paid Kirk Cousins. It's for a game like this. It's for a game against what arguably the best team in the NFC against the Rams. You want to see more from Kirk Cousins than what you saw last week, right?
Well, the Vikings as a team and what they were going through, one of their best players, one of their captains in crisis, a serious mental health issue involving other players also. So I'm not going to blame all that on Kirk Cousins. And the reason why, because that's a Vikings team that we hadn't seen. They've been very, very consistent in how they played and the energy for which they played with. That was a different team on the field last week. Now, Kirk Cousins fumbling the football or turning the football over, those are things that Kurt has done, and he's got to be responsible. But as we saw in the Green Bay game, he went tit for tat with Aaron Rodgers. Yep. Now, Aaron was hobbled, but when you look at the numbers, they didn't tie that game because their lack of productivity from their quarterback. Like, Kurt has proven himself within that locker room for people that I talk to. To me, I believe the biggest story of this game is the quarterback on the other side. Because I believe Jared Goff, he can be a superstar. But I believe that everyone else is going to look every other way for the Rams to be able to give them credit besides their quarterback. You can't run this type of offense with just a play caller in Sean McVay. Yes, he deserves a lot of credit for the creativity, but if you don't have someone driving the car like Jared, I don't believe he's a game manager. I believe he's going to be a big-time player, and he's got great players around him, and I believe that's the reason why they're the best team right now in the NFL.
And he is coming off one of the best games of his career against a good Chargers defense. I know that the Chargers don't have Joey Bosa, and they're not going to have him. They still have Melvin Ingram. They still have Derwin James. That is a good defense, and he carved them up. 80% completions, 3 touchdowns, 124 rating. He was my big X factor for this team coming into the year. He has gotten better every single week this year. He was like an A-minus player week 1 to an A to an A-plus in week 3. So I think it's a great point that when we talk about the success of the Rams, they're one of the few teams that the quarterback's almost a supporting actor in the story. We talk about Gurley and all the weapons they have. Goff has been excellent for them, and he can be the X factor in this game. I'm going to bring up one other thing that might seem like a small point, but it could be relevant tonight. I think a 5:20 weekday start in Los Angeles is going to minimize a home field advantage for the Rams early on. I think the fact that this is a weekday game that starts West Coast time at 5:20, I don't think you're going to have the fervent crowd we're used to start nationally televised nightly games. So that's one spot where the Vikings, when they maybe would typically defer if they win the opening kickoff, maybe say, you know what, we'll take the football when the crowd is not at its fevered pitch already because they're getting to their seats. Little things like that. Both of these teams are on their second kicker of the year. Something to watch there. Like, I think these are the two best teams in the NFC along with Philadelphia. And so I think all those little things can have major impacts
on. But when you're getting down to the little nitty-gritty like home field advantage and the kickers, you're basically saying these are two fairly evenly matched teams. So when you have to go 3, 4, 5 layers down, this is going to be a good game between the two of them.
It should be a very good game. It's a game that should live up to the hype. A lot of very, very talented players. The Vikings, I believe, are in a critical part of their season because we see this all the time. Teams with great expectations, teams reach the championship game, and we always make them that next step. The Vikings, we should, because they didn't lose a whole bunch of players, and they added Kirk Cousins. So the expectations were real there in Minnesota. They weren't outrageous. In Los Angeles, what Sean McVay did, we believe he's the new Mike March to the NFL. We believe he's here to stay, and he has the type of personnel. And just even what they said with the Khalil Mack trade, we were trying to get Khalil Mack. So they have said outwardly, they have said in-house, they're trying to win a championship. So, yes, we know the NFC has top to bottom stronger teams than the AFC, and these are two of the strongest teams in the NFC.
All right, we have plenty more on this game a little bit later in the show. But coming up,
Yeah, watch the opening, too. I did the opening for Fox.
That's what you were doing the other day. I didn't know that.
Wait till you hear the latest praise for Baker Mayfield. That's next on First Things First.
Hey, guys, we'll get right back to the show, but first I wanted to tell our listeners about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. Why do I recommend HelloFresh? There's something for everyone. Three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. Each box is made up of fresh, responsibly obtained ingredients and carefully selected from farms and high-rated trusted sources. Make family dinners fuss-free with HelloFresh's Picky Eater, kid-tested and approved family plan recipes. Rediscover the excitement of cooking. Look forward to your HelloFresh delivery, knowing dinner just got that much easier. HelloFresh believes cooking should be simple and convenient, not a chore. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. You won't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes. There are so many benefits of subscribing, so you can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. Spend less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week and get that time back to do more of what you love. Get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping for a total of $60 off. That's $20 off your first three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/FTF60 and enter FTF60. Again, for a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/FTF60 and enter FTF60 as the promo code. So visit HelloFresh today.
All right, moving on to a big reason the Cleveland Browns will be must-watch football this season: Baker Mayfield. The first overall pick will lead the Browns into Oakland this weekend, fresh off leading the Browns to its first win since the 2016 season. Teammate Jarvis Landry said Mayfield has wowed him early. Take a listen.
I just kind of kept running, and then before you know it, the ball was up. And, you know, he throws a ball with so much zip, and, you know, it got to me so quickly. Man, I got to turn on the jug machine up to like 8 or 9. Now, since Baker throw that ball so hard, he threw one to me in the game, and I dropped it because I didn't even know how to put my hand. And before I could make the decision, you know, the ball was on me, you know, so I just realized it's a little bit of a different ball with, you know, a lot more velocity. So, you know, I definitely got to get on the jugs for that and just catch as many balls from Baker as possible.
See, does a fast, hard zinger throw like that make a good quarterback? Or is that just his velocity? Or what is your reaction to what Jarvis Landry said?
Your adjectives.
The zinger throw. It's perfect. I grade it.
Okay.
This is the thing. In football now, so much has to do with the quarterback and his accuracy.
Yeah.
Okay, accuracy is one thing, velocity is the other. Baker Mayfield, he's one of the rare quarterbacks that we've seen come into college football that has both. Nick talks about it all the time. We shouldn't be even surprised that Baker Mayfield is going to be accurate in the NFL. In college football, he was the best ever.
He was the set the efficiency mark in back-to-back years, the all-time mark. So now, we knew he could do that. We knew he could see guys and have pinpoint accuracy.
But what we get consumed with as people that look at quarterbacks, we get into the prototypes. How big is the guy? Like Josh Allen. There's a reason why people rave about him, because people love the prototypes. 6'4", 6'5", 220 pounds, people love him. So people like Baker Mayfield, people like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, all these guys, not prototypical height, but all of them throw with great velocity. They have learned at a very, very young age to be able to throw the ball with their whole body. Watching Drew Brees break the completion record there in Atlanta this weekend, there's a reason for that, because he throws with a lot of velocity. Baker can do the same thing. The football, when it has a lot of velocity, it's able to, you can actually see the point of it, because a guy, if he throws it with a lot of velocity, he's going to have a tighter spiral. So what Jarvis is talking about is, I need to be able to get my hands and my eyes used to that different velocity. It's no different than a pitcher. If you were at batting practice, they throw at a certain speed so guys can get their swing locked in. But in the game, you know the velocity is going to increase. So, yes, the jugs machine, I've worked with them. It's the best training tool to be able to train people to get their eyes ready for the football. And if a guy throws a wobbly ball with a jug machine, you can put it in there a little bit sideways and the ball comes out wobbly. So instead of having a guy throw to you after practice 40, 50, 60, 100 balls and you get his arm wore out, you get his legs worn out from dropping back, you get a jug machine to be able to shoot them to you. So Jarvis is on to, yes, that's the way you have to train your eye when you have a guy who has a big-time arm like Baker. And you can see in the game, the ball went past his eyes and hit his body. Now, he's got great hands, but his eyes have not adjusted to having the new quarterback. So that's one thing that wide receivers, their eyes have to adjust to that point and the ball getting on them a lot quicker.
On that play, you could clearly tell he was used to catching a ball from Tyrod Taylor, where he can wait for it, get it, and go. That ball got up on him too quick. It was a perfectly placed ball. I have a question about the jugs machine, actually, because people that haven't used it, when he said, I've got to up it to 8 or 9, what would the speed be for a typical average quarterback that you'd want to practice on?
Yeah, I don't think the speed is important because it can get very, very dangerous. You can get them up to close to 100 miles an hour. But when we've been working on them for a long time, typically you start off around 45, 50 miles an hour. In college, around 65, NFL, 75 to 90. That's what we're typically going to have it gauged at. One thing, too, is you have to be careful of the distance, because even if you have it on a certain miles per hour, the closer you get to the jug machine, and that's what Jarvis eventually, he'll be able to do that.
But so my question is, or my observation, I should say, is what there are a lot of guys that have really strong arms. But what we've talked about with Josh Allen, even if he has the strongest arm, is that what we saw from him in the preseason, what we saw from him in college, was it was fastball every time. It was the inability to vary speeds. I don't see that as a problem for Baker Mayfield. I know in the pros the sample size is tiny, but in college football, I didn't see him throwing a fastball every time. When he needed to be able to put touch on a pass,
yes,
he absolutely could, but he still had the requisite arm strength to be able to rear back and fire it in there when he needed to.
Yeah, he has great arm. He has a great arm. No one has going to have the arm of a Josh Allen. Those are very, very rare. Him, Cutler, Brett Favre, and everything. But out of all those quarterbacks, only a few of them ever learned to be a pitcher of the football compared to a thrower of the football. The other thing with Baker, the reason why his ball gets on you is not just the velocity. It is how quick can a quarterback, from the time they clutch to the time they recognize where they want to go, how quick can they get that motion up and over? Josh Allen, he takes his hand off. The ball goes down. It goes back. So that, it negates some of the speed that he has. So he has to rush it to be able to get there. Baker has a quick over-the-top motion, a lot like Drew Brees, a lot like Russell Wilson, and that's what we should get used to seeing. Like, he's got one of the good accuracy arm. That's what you want. Like, if I could have one or the other, give me accuracy.
And what you were describing with Josh Allen, that's not the exact same, but that's one of the issues Cam has, right? That sometimes Cam will, that his, he will take too long to get it there.
Cam's biggest problem is his feet. He's never real disciplined with his feet. And spending time with Drew Brees this weekend, that's what Drew told me. If you want, Chris, younger quarterbacks can get more accurate, but they keep working on their arm. They keep working on other things. It's all about their footwork. When you see Cam leaning back, you see his footwork being poor. Drew Brees says the footwork is the number one thing to being an accurate quarterback.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
We are now going viral here on First Things First. All right, check this out. Lakers guard Lance Stephenson living his best life in L.A., cruising around the city, wearing the do-rag with the Lakers colors on it. Gotta love me a little, Lance.
That looked like me in high school. I'm telling you.
Oh, with those colors.
Oh, absolutely.
I was going to say, the do-rag, it looks like you about 4:45 in the morning.
I was just going to say, an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, I was driving, but wasn't supposed to be driving. My license got suspended when I was 15. They got suspended till I was 18.
Because you were driving without a license?
I took off in my mom's car, had an accident, wrecked into this house, man. This house
Bad
lady
boy,
had wheeled it.
CC.
Look, my fifth grade math teacher had wheeled this house to a bunch of cats, and I went through an iron gate and almost hit the house. Man, they tried to sue me and everything. Oh,
sue
it was a
you.
Big to-do. Oh, yeah. Potential
blood from a stone. Oh, they wanted to sue you for money you were gonna get.
Oh, they knew I was going somewhere.
I'm sorry, your teacher had this house designated for cats?
Yeah, exactly what I said, Jenna. Yeah, like, it's true. I know you're not used to that. This is true.
I just never heard of anything. She had the house just for the cats.
Yeah, that's what you save it for, TV. That's what you save it for. It's right under the spaceship.
I learn something new every single day from this man, and I spend 3 hours with him every day.
Now I have to explain it to him.
Purple and Clearly. Gold do-rag for Lance.
I'm telling you. Middletown. Purple. We're doing it. Lance, I'm with you, bro. Much respect. Get a little sporting wave. It's harder when you're playing sports, though, because Deontay give you the sporting wave. He sweat. He ain't never sweating while doing nothing athletic. So the sporting wave, it gets in your eyes and everything. So my guy that does my sporting wave and wave cap, he got me messed up. That's why my eyes be red.
Anthony Davis used wave cap on his eyebrows.
Cats. Houses for cats. Time for stories to start your morning. Speaking of, Anthony Davis had some bold words as he prepares to try and bring the Pelicans back to the playoffs. He said he is the best player in the game. Nick, is Anthony Davis the best player in the game, or did he just mumble the words, according to my agent, right afterwards?
He's not the best player in the game, but he could finish this year the second best player in the game. He absolutely could. Like, could Anthony Davis leapfrog Durant, Steph, and Harden this year? He could. Like, I'm not going to put that past him. He's right on the cusp.
If he can leapfrog them, then he can leapfrog LeBron.
You said yesterday, and I agree with you, that the gap between LeBron and second place is
enormous. Yeah, but I just can't allow you just to say, oh, he can leapfrog those other guys. I mean.
Well, I think some people already think he's ahead of Harden. Some people already think he's ahead of Steph. A lot of people think it goes LeBron, Durant, Davis. And so if you're third in some people's eyes, can you become second? Sure.
I go Durant, Steph, man.
I would, too. I'm just saying I think he can get in the discussion for second best player alive. And that's the only spot available.
Yeah, it's hard to be the best player in the world and have eyebrows like that. That's why I get mine done. Right? Like, brow.
That's
let me get take my advice. If you want to get on LeBron's corner, get touched up. Like, all right? I'm just telling you. Get touched up.
You got a guy.
Up.
You got a guy. Yeah,
European waxing.
Oh.
No, I got a girl.
Guys.
I got a
We can't have any Anthony Davis discussion until he gets his eyebrows fixed, because that's all CeCe can focus on.
Moving on to Arizona rookie quarterback Josh Rosen.
It took me a while, too.
He will hit a lot of pressure before we got him done. He will face off against the Seahawks this weekend as the starting quarterback. However, he says he has prepared every week like he's the starting quarterback. See, what are you expecting from Rosen in this game?
I expect him to struggle. I love these guys when they do their interviews and everything. They say, Jenna, you're preparing for your first show. It's like, yeah, Jenna's like, no, I've been preparing. I've been doing shows all along. Well, you ain't never done no show, so how you prepare?
Right.
So these guys are just young. They don't even know what they're saying. Listen, that first quarter is going to be a football game he had never seen before. He's going to struggle. Eventually, though, yes, he will. They need better talent around him. So protect him. Don't let this kid, because this kid's from the suburbs, don't let him get. Thank God they got the new pillow rules for the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It's a perfect time for him.
The pillow rules.
Gee, because he's not. He can't take a serious pounding.
I did just see Sam Darnold a few weeks ago in his first game ever. I think he's from similar communities as Josh Rosen, come out and play quite well.
He's a lot tougher than him.
Okay, fine. And he's built better than him. But, again, I think.
Just based on college.
No, I
agree. How they responded to getting hit.
For sure.
And their body.
And he's built better. No, I'm conceding that point. And, of course, anyone can get beat out of the game. But as far as do I think it's possible Josh Rosen comes out and has a good rookie debut? Absolutely. Now, does that mean he's going to have an awful game at some point in his first month of football? Is it going to be game one, game two, game three? I'm not sure, but I think he can play well his first game.
All right, moving on. Bad news for the L.A. Chargers. Joey Bosa is expected to be out until at least week 9. He continues to recover from a bruised bone in his foot. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Chargers?
It's a big deal for the Chargers. Also a big deal. Let me rip up my Joey Bosa Defensive Player of the Year bet ticket because that's useless now. I mean,
yeah,
you're like
the Madden curse. If Nick says it about you, watch your career going the other way. LeBron, watch out, buddy. You might lose a hand or something.
That's why he broke his hand in the finals. This is a huge blow. There's a reason that myself and others thought he could be Defensive Player of the Year this year. Mm-hmm. He is a great player. And the Chargers have already once again dug themselves a hole they shouldn't have. By the time he gets back, the Chiefs might have created too much of a distance between them and the Chargers for the division.
Jenna, let me give you a little news flash here. There is no bone bruise that lasts 2 months, okay? When he originally got hurt, I think it was something more serious, all right? They tried to act like, oh, he's day-to-day. He's been day-to-day.
For a month already.
Yeah, over a month, yes. Yeah, so I think something is seriously wrong with this foot. Man, the Bosa right now, their family, man, they're going through some injury. Joey hurt with the Chargers. Nicky hurt with Ohio State. Good football players, but get rested. Them feet are very, very, they can alter your career, man. Take your time.
All right. Finally, the Patriots offense has struggled through the first 3 weeks. This is interesting. One former Patriots executive placed the blame on an unexpected player. Mike Lombardi said Gronk doesn't have the same quickness that he once had, and that limits what you can do offensively. CeCe, do you agree with the assessment?
I mean, I'd like to see the tape that he was looking at, or I'd like to be sitting in the couch or something with the dip in it that he saw that he was sitting in. He could see that on his TV screen. It's impossible. If you watch the coverages that Gronk has gotten, it's impossible to judge how fast he can move because he's limited off the line of scrimmage. The game plan for the first 3 weeks, the Texans, Jacksonville, Detroit, man, negate Rob coming off the line of scrimmage, put multiple people on him, put a lot of people in front of him. You can't judge that. So I don't know what he's looking at, all right? I'm going to tell you. I don't know. He typically has some good stuff to say, but sometimes people are reaching. I don't see that in Gronk right now, or I don't have enough plays that I would be able to justify saying that. I have not seen
enough
him slow
video
down.
Evidence of it. I mean, who has the best release off the line of scrimmage of any player in the league right now, or just one of the best? I'm not asking you to give a definitive number one.
Odell Beckham.
Okay. How quick would he look if he was getting gunner coverage at the line of scrimmage, double teamed at the line like Gronk was against Detroit?
No, he would slow down tremendously.
Right. And Gronk, by the way, it's not like he ever was a burner. He's too big to be that. Gronk's ability was how strong he is, how big he is, what an absurd catch radius he has. Like, those were the things that Gronk did and has always done at an A-plus level. It's never been, oh, I'm going to beat my man off the line of scrimmage and be running free down the field. Think about the Gronk highlights we know that come to mind. They're not him running wide open. It's contested catches. It's catches where he has someone on him, but he's able to get enough separation to go up and get it.
And the last time I heard a rumor like this about a great Patriot player, it was after Kansas City, I think, had beaten.
Annihilated him.
And Tom Brady was done. And Trent Dilfer admits his worst day in television. He was like, oh, man, the dynasty is over. They're done. Tom Brady is done. I'm slow to the party. I'm slow to if a guy can play, and I'm slow to if a guy is washed up, even though Adrian Peterson is trying to prove me wrong in that category. So I haven't seen enough evidence that I would say Gronk has slowed down. The number one tight end in the NFL is Rob Gronkowski.
Also,
number two, Travis Kelce.
He's also basically their only target. He's been double teamed and getting double coverage every game so far.
Well,
he's clearly not the problem with this Patriots offense.
And if other teams thought this, then he wouldn't be getting the coverage that he's getting. Like, if they thought, oh, Gronk's a lesser version of himself.
Yeah, they used to cover him with one guy. Now he slowed down to cover him with two.
Yeah, so I think that we're, right now, the Patriots have a lot of issues. I don't consider Gronk anywhere on the list.
All right, let's move on to the Chiefs now. There is a reason Andy Reid has been sleeping like a baby the last 3 weeks. No quarterback stress. Patrick Mahomes has been an absolute gift for Coach Reid. In his first three games as the full-time starter, the Chiefs are 3-0. And they're just the third team in NFL history to score 38 points or more in each of the first three games. Or in other words, full night sleep. CeCe, what's been the key to the Chiefs' explosive offense early on?
The number one thing is the volume of offense that the quarterback knows and the comfort level. Andy Reid traded what he knew, a quarterback he can win 10 games with, getting to the playoff in Alex Smith. When you trade that guy out of the building, you're not trying to do Alex a favor because you realize you have a player that's got to play. And if they didn't try to sign Alex to a shorter contract where he can potentially mentor, that then you could see that, wow, they must really trust this guy. And what they did in the offseason, that gave me a lot of faith that he must be really, really good. You know he's got the arm talent. But you just don't know how much a volume of football that people can handle. We don't know that in our quarterbacks. And you can see, based on the multiple formations, the multiple motions that they do, and how they target so many different guys. I told Nick, I was watching how Todd Haley was calling plays in Cleveland. I knew they were getting ready to bench Tyrod Taylor. Because I knew that the coordinator, he couldn't call plays and attack the defense the way he would typically do it. Andy Reid, when he got Donovan McNabb running at full speed, that's the way he attacked defenses. And when he has talent on the outside speed like he has in Kansas City, that's how he's going to attack NFL defenses. And that speaks to the ability, not only arm talent of Mahomes, but it speaks to his brain and how much information he can retain and be able to spit out to his teammates in the leadership role.
I'm glad you brought up Todd Haley, because the Chiefs lost their offensive coordinator this year, this summer. Matt Nagy, he went to go be the head coach of Chicago. By the way, the Andy Reid coaching tree is now one quarter of the NFL. Andy Reid plus seven assistants. Those are eight
Doug
head
Peterson.
Coaches.
Yeah.
And so Doug Peterson, Ron Rivera, Todd Bowles, go down the list. Their new offensive coordinator is a guy you talked with me about yesterday, Eric Bieniemy. And he was a great college player. He almost won the Heisman at Colorado. He was he had a long NFL career, but never had the success in the NFL they had at the collegiate ranks. And so you sent out to the staff yesterday an article about Bieniemy from the Kansas City Star, my hometown paper, and it talks about how a lot of the things that we are giving Andy Reid credit for, that Andy Reid's done a great job, but Bieniemy's the one doing the weekly game plans. He's the one running the meetings. Mm-hmm. And for usually when you lose a coordinator to a head coaching job.
And he's also speaking into the helmet of the quarterback.
Correct.
So he's the voice in his ear when he's running out these obscene numbers.
And who usually is?
Andy Reid has been that voice everywhere he's been.
And so what do you, how surprised are you, or impressed maybe is the better term, that the Chiefs, after losing a great coordinator, a coordinator that's good enough to get a head coaching job, that their offense not only hasn't missed a beat, but is going to these levels with a guy who's a first-time offensive coordinator in this league, in Eric Bieniemy?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I've been knowing Eric for a long time. I knew him when he played in the league, knew him when he was a great college player, but also just in conversations with him. He coached Adrian Peterson when Brad Childress was there in Minnesota, and their relationship. Brad says great things about him. His ability to be able to create things that he believes from college that will be effective in the pros, you start to see that. Now, when you have Adrian Peterson, you've got to be an I formation team. So you're not going to get a lot of credit. But he was there when Adrian was able to get his career turned around. He's responsible for that. A lot of that on and off the field. Adrian talks about him and the impact that he had on his career. But his creativity was opened up by Andy Reid and his trust. Andy Reid knew in a year or two he was going to lose Nagy as a coordinator. He knew he was going to lose him to be a head coach. He knew he was just the type that NFL owners like to hire. So for him, he went out and got Bieniemy and put him in that position, and he should be the next hot hire. If you can't get Shaw from Stanford, from Stanford to be able to come in to pro football from college football, Eric Bieniemy should be on everyone's short list when you start looking for a creative young mind, a guy who has the attention of these young guys and the attention that he has of Pat Mahomes. He's speaking to Pat Mahomes. That right there to me is the ultimate validation from Andy Reid when he allows him to speak in that play clock to those last 15 seconds to be able to call those plays into the mic.
How many years would you like an offensive coordinator to stick with a young offense, a young young quarterback now that they're starting to develop this relationship? I mean, if you're talking he could actually branch out and head out next year, wouldn't you want him there for a couple years?
You would like to have him there, but I'm a believer in talent. Regardless of what field you're in, I believe in giving people an opportunity. It's a lot like when I saw Nick and I saw all his videos. I saw him working on the radio, big baggy shirts and everything. I was like, yeah, clean shaven and everything. He might be all right. And I just believe in that. I really believe in people that have talent, then you find something for them to do. As long as you're going to be with them, you don't know that. Like, you can't determine the length of it, but Andy Reid, the impact that he's made on Bienemy, I believe that we'll start hearing that name circulate around the NFL more, because also they're putting up numbers that people, it's a copycat league. People are going to try to copycat that. Them and the Rams right now from an offensive standpoint, you got to have your eyes on.
And I want to – one other thing about Andy Reid, his history, and Eric Bieniemy. The path these days to becoming an NFL head coach is quarterback whisperer, offensive coordinator. And there are not a lot of
– or be a quarterback liar, be lying to the quarterback.
Okay, yeah. Sure. One of the
– John Gruden.
Absolutely. But there's have not been a lot of opportunities to run offenses – for black coaches.
No.
There's a lot of black coaches that are positional coaches or defensive coordinators because people still think that's more about motivation. But if schematic and tactically, typically those, unfortunately, are reserved for the white guys. And the fact that this is a guy that played running back, was running back's coach, and Andy Reid elevated him to offensive coordinator, and now he potentially could be a head coach based on his offensive schematics, that could be hopefully more of a trend we see across the league. Because Reid, when you see Leslie Frazier was an NFL head coach from his tree, Todd Bowles, Ron Rivera, a lot of the minority coaches in this league that have gotten opportunities, they are Tony Dungy's tree and they are Andy Reid's tree. And hopefully Eric Bieniemy continues on that. So I think that's an underrated part of this story as well.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, can Carson Wentz get even better in his second start of the season? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with former Super Bowl champ, Chris Caney.
Hey, what up, Chris? How you doing, Jenna?
I love it. It's a nice introduction, Nick Caney.
I don't know what you do, man. I don't know what you do.
I didn't do anything.
Every time you come here, you destroy my family. My house is always nice and calm, then you come in and just destroy it.
Boom.
Jenna get to messing up.
Air five. Hey, Chris Caney, I don't think anyone was...
She's getting ready to say.
Nothing. No idea. I was like, what are we talking about? I don't think anyone was expecting Carson Wentz to give an MVP performance in his first game back last week. Coming off knee surgery, coming off the highest of high expectations, Wentz was decent in his debut, throwing for over 250 yards and a touchdown in a win over the Colts. He's back at again this weekend to face the Tennessee Titans. His head coach fully understands and expects an upward trajectory with his play as the season goes on.
I think things will, you know, come into focus a little bit more for him this week. Did some great things, obviously, last week, and not only through the air, but with his arm and how he managed, you know, the run game. And I just think that the more reps and the more time he's out there, it just gets better and better. Things will begin to slow down, you know, and we start getting more of the pieces around him back, you know, will also help.
Chris, expectations were tempered in game one, the first week that Carson Wentz saw a little play action here. But what about for week two? Do they open things up a little bit more for him?
Well, I don't know if they necessarily need to open things up. I think they'll have more in the game plan because Carson Wentz would have settled down. He won't necessarily have the emotions going like he did coming back because this is his first real game action since that injury in December. But I like what Doug Peterson tried to do at the beginning of that game, using that turbo tempo, letting Carson get into a rhythm, and, oh, by the way, standardizing that Colts defense. Colts came out in a lot of split safety looks because guess what? Jay Ajayi and Darren Sproles were down. Mm-hmm. So they weren't necessarily afraid of the run game of the Eagles. But when you looked at Carson's performance overall, there was a lot to be desired, particularly in the second and the third quarter, that turnover that he had coming out of halftime, the interception when he was targeting Zach Ertz on the stick route, and then, of course, that fumble that he had in the shadow of his own red zone. those plays can't happen. Now, when the Indianapolis Colts went up with that field goal, he did respond with a 17-play, 75-yard drive and ultimately put the game out of reach. And it took up 11 minutes in that fourth quarter. So you gave the Colts back the ball with 3 minutes left. So that was phenomenal. He was at his best when his best was required. I'm just looking in this game against the Titans for Carson Wentz to clean up some of the mistakes that we saw. Getting Alshon Jeffrey back will help. He was full go yesterday in practice coming off of that shoulder injury. So those are the things that will help him moving forward. But this was a performance in his debut that he can build on.
I think that's spot on. I went back and rewatched this game last night because there's so many games going on at 1 p.m. on Sunday. It was hard to focus on just one because I wanted to watch Luck more closely, and I certainly wanted to watch Wentz more closely. And what I saw in that game was rust as far as some of the ball security, a lack of sharpness on some of the throws, as you're mentioning.
Fully expected.
Absolutely. But what I also saw, which I didn't know if I could fully expect, was Wentz in the biggest spots looking just like Carson Wentz and some of the things that made him special last year, that made him the leading MVP candidate last year, which was third and nine. You've got not only a pass rush, but they get to him. It's one thing to be pressured, another thing to be hit. Him to shed that hit, roll out to his right, hit Nelson Aguilar as part of that 17-play, 75-yard drive. The things that I would have been most concerned about if he didn't look the same on, because those are things that made him special. The ability, the passes downfield. In the game, the two games with Nick Foles, they completed two passes 20-plus yards down the field. He completed two himself, or Carson completed two by himself, I should say, in last week's game. Like, you saw, okay, once he gets more game action, some of the rust starts to fall away. He, I think, is going to be the same guy he was last year, which was, at least in my eyes, a legitimate concern. So I was very encouraged by how he played, particularly on that drive that salted the game away.
Now, I've said this for the last couple of years. Carson, he's a superstar. He didn't have to play well in week number one for me to know that. Like, you know the guys can play this game and which guys can play it at a high level. Also, I think that we think that a knee injury is a major injury anymore, and it's really not, and especially for a quarterback. If you look at our top quarterbacks in this league, that being Aaron Rodgers, he's had three knee procedures. Tom Brady shattered his knee in the pocket. Drew Brees, from the other extent, his shoulder had to be reconstructed. So a lot of times these injuries, we as people covering the game, we think that, man, when was the last time we've seen a premier player's career altered by an ACL? It's very, very rare. These are like normal surgeries now. So we should expect him to be able to come back and play at a high level. We shouldn't expect in the first game with no training camp, no preseason games, and missing the type of action that he missed it. Yes, when you start facing those live bullets, it is totally different. But the Eagles will be a different offense when they get their running backs back, when they get Alshon Jeffries. Zach Ertz cannot be their leading receiver. He's one of three tight ends in Oakland and in San Francisco that leads their team in catches and in yards. So how explosive are you going to be with Zach Ertz? I don't think that much. So Alshon Jeffries coming back will help out Carson in game number two as a starter. And their running backs. Philadelphia should be able to run the football. They are at their best when they can run the football. Last week, how effective were they doing that? Very, very limited with all the injuries, Chris.
Yeah, and teams are having more success against the Titans by running the football versus throwing the football. Yep. Now, Dean Pease, their defensive coordinator, I know him. He's going to try to throw a lot of exotic pressures at Carson Wentz. So, CC, to your point, that run game is going to be important for the Eagles to stay on schedule with that offense. Second and six or better, third and three or better, not being obvious downs and distances where you have to throw the ball. And I think there's an opportunity for Doug Peterson to keep that Titans defense off balance. You saw a little bit in that Colts game, they had those one-word audibles for Carson Wentz. He's barking it out at the line of scrimmage. I did like the innovation of being able to utilize that bubble screen off of the zone read action. That's something that we haven't seen from this Eagles offense. So rather than have Carson Wentz being your running threat, if the defense overcommits to that run game, then you can throw the bubble out there to the slot. So I think that's an interesting little twist in this offense. But again, Doug Peterson showing you that he's got a lot of answers to be able to offset the deficiencies of Carson Wentz until he gets his legs back under him. Because one of the things that makes Wentz special is his mobility.
So you brought it up, Alshon Jeffrey, he is cleared for contact. He could play this weekend, Chris Canty. week four against the Titans, which is a good game for him to come back to. What are you expecting from him? How much could he actually contribute? Again, another guy who hasn't played in quite a long time.
Well, I'm expecting this Philadelphia Eagles offense to finally get back on track.
Yes.
They haven't looked like themselves the entire season, even in the preseason. So going up against the Titans, who's a team that I think is false flagging, because you look at their first three opponents, you got the Dolphins, the Texans, and the Jags, not exactly explosive offenses. I think this is going to be the biggest test for them this season by far, and I'm not sure that personnel-wise they're going to be up to the challenge going against that Eagles skill position core.
And even if you think the Dolphins are actually a more explosive offense than they're getting credit for, that's the team they lost to. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The Titans, mm-hmm. they beat Houston, they beat Jacksonville in an awful game. Don't rewatch that game.
No.
Don't take time to rewatch that 9-6 game. But your point on the Eagles' offense is spot on. How are the Eagles right now 2-1? Because they have basically top 10 every category defense. They have the number one rush defense. They're numbered, I think, eighth in points allowed, ninth in yards allowed. Like, they have been excellent defensively. Offensively, aside from red zone efficiency, they haven't done anything great this season offensively. I think that can change as Carson and Alshon Jeffrey, which is a huge addition, comes back.
One thing Doug Peterson's got to be careful in trying to get Carson up to full speed is you have to realize who you're going against. And going against the Titans, Marcus Mariota, lowest quarterback rating with anyone over 25 attempts. He's also the only one with 25 attempts that doesn't have a touchdown pass. In six of the last eight games, seven starts for him, he's thrown the ball for less than 200 yards. So why would I be trying to force the ball with Carson doing a lot of things that I might turn the ball over when I think that the Tennessee Titans are going to have a hard time going against that Eagles defense?
All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, why did one quarterback call his benching a slap in the face? That's next on First Things First. Thursday nights are about to get a lot bigger as Fox becomes the new network home for Thursday night football. It is the Vikings and the Rams in a battle of NFC heavyweights. It is tonight at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, also live on NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video. Now, it's a game.
Cannot wait. What a game to debut our coverage this year.
All right, back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Big news in college football. Quarterback Kelly Bryant decided to transfer from Clemson after Dabo Swinney decided to go with freshman Trevor Lawrence as the starter. Bryant had a 16-2 record, replacing Deshaun Watson after Clemson won the national title. He had this to say about his decision. They asked me how I felt about it. I was like, I'm not discrediting Trevor. He's doing everything ahead of him and asked of him. But on my side of it, I feel like I haven't done anything to not be the starter. I've been here. I've waited my turn. I've done everything y'all have asked me to do, plus more. I've never been a distraction. I've never been in trouble with anything. To me, it was kind of a slap in the face. All right, CC, start with you. What do you make of Kelly Bryant's decision?
Well, if you look at the top programs in college football, all of them have issues as far as their quarterback. Not only Clemson, look at Alabama, the same type of controversy. Ohio State, one of the teams finished right outside the college football playoff last year. You see they have Joe Burris. He transferred to LSU. He's starting for them now. They had the same thing going on. It's called over-recruiting. The top teams in college football, yes, they will recruit you. They'll tell you how much they love you. But if you think they're not out knocking on kids' doors trying to bring in more talented players, then you are wrong about college football. That's what these programs are going to do. So, yes, they're in love with you now until they fall in love with someone else later. Has Kelly Bryant developed the way that we thought? I thought he was going to be the next Deshaun Watson. But only reason why is because he was a black quarterback playing at Clemson. I was wrong about that because he didn't develop as a passer. Anytime you have a blue-chip kid, a five-star kid, who comes out of high school football, enrolls in Clemson early, he was the number one player in last year's Rival and 247 Scouting Service. Mm-hmm. Number one player, number one pro quarterback. You know this kid's coming to campus. You have to make sure that the coaches think that he's going to be the future and not the right now. And Kelly Bryant didn't do that in the spring, didn't do that till the summer. They were basically even the whole way. And I always tell kids, they're always going to give it to the younger player in college because they have more years of experience and his ceiling is going to be higher because he hadn't been there 3 or 4 years like the other prospects typically have been. So I can understand why a guy would want to leave, college because there's someone in front of them. But I have a problem with young athletes today because they don't want to compete. They want everything easy. It's not going to be easy. It's called sports. I had one guy in the NFL call me yesterday. Man, I'm not getting enough opportunities. I said, you starting in the NFL. I said, you one of 62 that play your position in the world. You're one of the best at doing your job. And I said, hey, I hate to tell you, you need to get better. Get better at the small little things. And Kelly Bryant didn't get better at the small things. That's why his position was taken. And it's not a slap in the face. It's called competition, and it's called sports.
To me, it was clear, though. I seen this coming a couple of weeks ago. When you watch the Texas A&M game and you see Kelly Bryant's unwillingness to throw the ball down the field, and then when Sunshine comes in the game, the very first pass that he has, he throws it deep downfield outside to T. Higgins, and guess what? It's a touchdown.
I think they scored touchdowns three of the first four possessions.
Absolutely, Nick, but that's the difference with Trevor Lawrence as your quarterback versus Kelly Bryant. Now, there's a little bit of a loss in terms of what your quarterback is bringing to the table in the run game, but in terms of your offense, being able to match points with the best offenses in the country, like Alabama with Tua, and like Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, and what they're doing out there with that program, and Kyle Murray, with the Georgias of the world, with Ohio State, you have to have a quarterback that's willing to push the ball down the field in the vertical passing game. Clemson has got the skill position players to get it done, but they just haven't had the quarterback that's willing to take those chances until now.
Listen, I think Trevor Lawrence is better. The guy's 18 years old and is a phenom.
Like, he's a stud.
Absolutely. I think he's better.
6'5", 6'6".
I get it. I understand why they're making this move. I don't think it's fair to say Kelly Bryant didn't want to compete. Kelly Bryant competed with Deshaun Watson knowing he's not going to overtake him for 2 years. Kelly Bryant
You're not competing. You're just going to practice.
Exactly.
Sure. But his point that I did everything that was asked of me, that when he realized early on he wasn't going to overtake Deshaun Watson, didn't transfer, stayed there. Last year, got them to the college football playoff. In fact, the two quarterbacks that started the college football semifinal January 1 of this year are both transferring now, Jalen Hurts and Kelly Bryant. I understand why Clemson did what they did, because they have to. It's essentially a professional program. Mm-hmm. They have to go with the best option for them. And I give Dabo Swinney credit for announcing it when he did, before Kelly Bryant's played his fourth game and blown his played his fifth game and blown his eligibility. Yep. To where now he can transfer and play somewhere next year. But I don't blame Kelly Bryant at all. This isn't, to me, a guy that there's only going to be one quarterback spot. It's his last year of college football, and he just lost his job. I don't want to sit there and hope for an injury. I don't want to sit there and kind of be rooting against my team. I want to be able to go play football.
Well, this
somewhere.
Is the thing. He's not a pro. And I always tell my kids, listen, you better look behind you. If that guy's a pro, then you need to transfer. But he's a college student. He ain't playing no pro football. He's not cut out for pro football.
Ooh, Kelly or Trevor?
Kelly. No. Okay.
Trevor's
going pro.
Yes. So what you do is you enjoy the college experience. They're going to need Kelly Bryant the rest of this season. When I say not compete, that's what I say. Leave the school and not leave the situation. That football team's going to need two quarterbacks this year. I would stay there, finish out my season there, because I'm not playing pro. It's different than Jalen Hurts. Jalen's got a couple seasons left, and this is going to be his last stint at college football. Playing football, unless he goes to the CFL. The whole experience of coming to Clemson, you know that they can recruit someone over you. So you're naive being there. You went to a big-time school. You know that chance. When you go to these big-time schools, that is a reality that they could bring in someone that ultimately, even though you might, just because you wait don't mean that you're promised something. No, that means if you're the best player and you wait, you'll get the spot. But if you're not the best player, you shouldn't be playing.
I'm agreeing with you on that one, CC. The commentary from Kelly Bryant is what throws me off a little bit by saying it's a slap in the face just because you've said all the right things and you've done all the right things and that you quarterback that team to the college football playoff last year. All of those things are great, but it's a more talented player at that position now in Trevor Lawrence, and you recognize what he brings to the table, and ultimately that's what's in the best interest of this year's football team,
right. Knowing
what's down the road. Clemson is going to sleepwalk through their ACC schedule, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they're going to get upset at home by Syracuse? You think Duke is going to do something? Stop it.
No.
Stop it. It's not going to happen. So ultimately this is about the competition that's down the road, and Dabo Swinney saw what happened with that Alabama team in the national championship when they went from Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa. That's the difference. That's why you need a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence.
And I don't think people are criticizing Dabo for this. I think people understand it. Now, Kelly, maybe the slap in the face comments misplaced. Maybe he's a young person who's probably a little heartbroken, and he's lashing out somewhat.
Yeah, but there's some feelings in there.
There's some feelings, right? Yeah, like, I mean, he's in his feelings a bit. But as far as if Clemson and Dabo have to worry about just what's best for them, then it's totally Kelly Bryant's prerogative to worry about, you know what, maybe it is best for them that they have a quality backup. But I want to play one more year of college football
because I'm not a pro. This is what kids miss out on. You miss out on the relationships. Urban Meyer and I, we talk about this with kids. Don't make a 3 or 4 year decision. Make a 40-year decision. Mm-hmm. Right now, I left Ohio State. 1987. In 2018, I can go to that campus. I can go to any game. I can do anything I want. I got relationships that I've established with boosters. I got relationships I've established with people in that university that will last a lifetime. That's what you miss when you transfer, all right? Those relationships and being part of Clemson and going to Clemson and being a Tiger and being in Death Valley and doing that for 4 or 5 years, that right there is his reward, all right? If you go somewhere else, you're just another name playing another season in college football. And what I have seen is guys have missed out on those relationships, and they pass that off for just a little bit of fun and a half year of playing college football. Look long term. Believe in it. That's what college football is about. You and your colleagues on the football team, we have an advantage to the normal student body. Because I'm gonna get to know these people. I'm gonna reach out. These people are gonna get to know me, and I have a chance moving forward in my life, not like the other students do, because they haven't had that access. Take advantage of that access and let that be the springboard into the rest of your life compared to football. Football, it served you well, bruh. It's paid for your education. Take advantage. Don't let football use you. You bounce around to a couple schools. Football's gotten the best of you, man. Use college football and get the best of it.
It's just what happened to me senior year. I was playing volleyball, I was like, let me say, I think I should go to another school.
We had a chance to get an Emmy off that
Emmy reel. We're going to cut it right there. See you, Kansi.
Coming up, KD, why are his feelings bruised yet again? That's next on First Things First. On to Kevin Durant now and his feelings, which are hurt yet again. Durant has had a calm offseason, coming off his second straight championship, coming off a finals MVP, coming off talk as to where he's placed in the pantheon of basketball players. His Warriors look to win their fourth title in 5 years, so why doesn't Kevin Durant have more awards, like even a Defensive Player of the Year award? Why don't you ask Kevin Durant?
You know they're not going to give me anything. Even if it's on the fence, I have to be clear-cut better than everybody for me to even get a look. So,
Why do you think that is?
I mean, it's just pure hate for me, obviously, and no appreciation for my real skill for the game. But I get it. I understand where we're coming from. I understand what we have here in this building that scares everybody. But for me, I was just proud of the growth that I had in that area, whereas I just wanted to be able to be relied on to guard anybody. You know, accolades, that stuff, that stuff is kind of long gone for me, unless it's like, you know, finals or something like that, where it's probably pretty even. But, you know, regular season awards, I mean, I'm never going to get a look when it comes to that, especially playing here for the Warriors.
What's he talking about?
I mean, he makes a great point. No Warrior with this super team could ever win Defensive Player. Oh, wait, Draymond won it 2 years ago. But Kevin, that's a great mental place to be in, and I wish I could put myself in it, which is any accolade or award I don't get isn't because I didn't deserve it, just because folks must not like me. Let me tell a real story about Kevin Durant on that side of the ball. He was excellent last year for about 25, maybe 30 games. And then he went back to lackadaisical, good but not great defense.
He was great in his first year with the Warriors.
Defensively?
Yes.
Absolutely. And his teammate And his teammate Draymond was better, and Draymond won Defensive Player of the Year.
But how did he win if he was on the Warriors?
Exactly. I mean, listen, if what Kevin Durant's saying is true, then they could have given Steph the Finals MVP last year. Steph and KD, by the end of the finals, had about equal. I argued that KD should have gotten it. I thought they might give it to Steph almost as a lifetime achievement award for the finals.
Yeah, but Steph got off to a slow start. The slow start in the finals.
Once again, absolutely. But by the end of it, Steph had the one monster game. I think it was game two of the finals. Might have been game three, where he had the monster game. KD hit the big shot in game three. It could have gone either way. I thought it should have gone to KD. But the idea that there's some... some complex where, we're not giving you any awards. Of course, it's going to be hard to win league MVP when valuable is in the word, and it's hard to define how valuable any of the Warriors are when they're all together. But it's not because people hate Kevin Durant. It's not because people don't like Kevin Durant or they're scared of what's in that building.
Kevin Durant's played about a season and a half of tremendous defense. And I think in his first season, people gave him a great deal of credit. But Kevin Durant, his effort in Golden State on the defensive end, it was far different than what we saw in OKC or when he was in Seattle initially when he came into the NBA. So I think people recognized him. Man, his overall rim protection, man, we didn't know he had that in him. Like, we didn't know where that came from. So we gave him credit for that. Now, is there a lot of hate for Golden State in him? Yes, there is. But there's not an award that they should have gotten that they didn't get. Like, they've gotten what they should deserve. In the regular season, there's not a lot of awards that can be won by them.
Right.
You know, all NBA, first to second team, defensive player of the year, Draymond was worthy. Last year, during the regular season, what did they earn? They didn't earn anything. They kind of gave up on the regular season. They didn't really care that much about the regular season. When they were going for the best record, when they had sure enough points to prove to the rest of the NBA, yes, they were available for those awards. The MVP, when you put this kind of talent together, they've canceled each other out. So if Kevin said that, yes, he's right about that. But defensive MVP, Kevin Durant, I'll make a challenge to you. All right? Go out and get it this year. From game number one to game number 82, show us you're the best defender in the NBA. And I'll make sure that I campaign for you as a defender because I'm always campaigning for you and your cray-cray because I'm a little cray-cray myself and I'm kind of attracted to that.
Well, and by the way, you were campaigning for him for that award early through, I think, 10 or 15 games. He was leading the NBA in blocks. And you kept bringing that up, that Durant, we were worried about. The one thing on the Warriors were worried about was rim protection.
Yes.
Other than Draymond, Durant was filling that role. And then he started getting thrown out of games. The Rockets leapfrogged them in the standings, and the Warriors were in chill mode. You just can't have it always. You can't go into a season basically admitting what matters is the two-month sprint of the postseason and then get upset you don't get regular season awards. Kevin Durant was not the best defender on his own team. He has never been the best defender on his team since he's gotten to Golden State, and you could argue even in Oklahoma City.
Right. If there's someone on Golden State that should be complaining, it should be Klay. Because Klay is a bad dude defensively. Year in, year out, he don't say anything. He take the toughest assignment of anyone on Golden State, even tougher than Draymond. Draymond has more flexibility because he can go from the one to the five.
Mm-hmm.
But night in, night out, the guy who is not respected is Klay Thompson as a defender.
And Klay's the guy also that gets left off all NBA teams.
Yep.
Klay's the guy that each year we're like,
ah. And guess what? The dude who ain't gonna leave, Klay. Right.
The guy who's the happiest. But Klay, this costs Klay money. Klay's got to get his shoe deal from a Chinese company. Like, Klay, and he doesn't say a mumbling word about it. Like, I don't understand that KD could think there's some conspiracy against him. He's got Kevin Durant.
But he always, how could you not understand that?
I just don't understand why he would, I guess.
So, you're right, Jenna. We shouldn't be surprised.
I'm shocked that you're both surprised that he's upset that he didn't get something.
No, I'm not surprised. Like, this is how he feels.
Yeah.
This is how Kevin Durant, no. But I'm just making a case for him. Let's do it. 2018-19 season, let's go get the defensive MVP. Let's go get it. You got the opportunity. Let's go do it, KD.
All right. Coming up.
Tweet me. Hit me up, man. I know you watched the show.
Zeke has some takes on the Cowboys offense next on First Things First. Time now for stories to start your morning. We start with some interesting news out of Houston. Carmelo Anthony is expected to come off the bench for the Rockets this season. It's a big change for Melo. Remember last year around this time, he laughed at the notion of him coming off the bench. Nick, what do you make of this development for Melo?
So it's interesting. We talked about how Melo was going to be essentially a de facto starter because we were looking at it as they were going to start two forwards. They're not going to start two forwards. What this means is it's going to be CP3, Harden, and Eric Gordon coming from the six-man role, so they're going to start three guards along with P.J. Tucker and Clint Capela. That's their best five-man lineup. It also allows them to pair Melo with James Ennis, who's a guy they really like defensively when he's in that second-man unit. I get why the Rockets are doing this. It's a little unconventional from as far as a size and lineup perspective, but that's their best five guys that they will be starting with Melo providing scoring punch off the bench.
And I like the matchup. Melo getting those reps against second units, I think he should thrive in that. And the rest of his career, if he can play that type of role and have some injuries during the course of the season, say he might start 20 games, but his primary role and his responsibility should be able to come off the bench and be in the crucial minutes at the end of the game. That's more important.
On to the NFL now. Bills rookie quarterback Josh Allen was extremely impressive in week three against the Vikings. He really utilized his legs, rushing for 2 touchdowns and 39 yards. Now Josh Allen says he's hoping that teams begin using a spy on him to slow down his running. See, should teams start spying Allen?
First, I need a spy to be able to find the quarterback inside of him. All right? Like, he need to stop tripping. The Vikings were asleep at the wheel. Let him keep running the football, and let me tell you what's going to end up, Jenna, happening. He's going to end up being in the hospital. He's going to be on the injured reserve. You better stay back in that pocket. You better understand that sooner than later. You are not going to make a living, son. All right? I know you play football in Wyoming, but, man, one of the
There you go. Good job, Steve. Okay. Right there. Good day not to get fired.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, this is another game I actually went back and watched. Those passing yards he had, it was 3 yards in the air.
Yes.
4 yards in the air. And by the way, credit to him because he was zipping those in the preseason. He had a little more touch on those. He is a good athlete. But we've seen a lot of athletes a lot better than him get lit up. I'm not spending one of my 11.
Defense is going to be better off putting that guy in the coverage. Yes. And Josh going to throw it to him.
And Josh going to be spying that guy running the other way with the ball. I'm not spending one of my 11 guys spying Josh Allen.
Yeah.
All right, bad news for the L.A. Chargers. Joey Bosa is expected to be out until at least week 9. He continues to recover from a bruised bone in his foot. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Chargers?
Big deal for the Chargers. That's their best defensive player. Big deal for me. I'm out $500 for my defensive player of the year future, but nobody cares. He's laughing at me about it.
How much money would you have made if you had listened to me? Just a few football tips. Just a few.
How much would I not have lost?
I get it.
See, let's talk about my finances later. Point is, the day this injury happened, the initial report was significant foot injury.
Yes.
The next day, they were like, no. He's day-to-day, not a significant foot injury. That was 6 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
And now we're talking about another 6 weeks, so something's been missed here. That Chargers medical staff, ooh-wee.
Yeah, this one of the young superstars in the league. If I was Joey, I'd be very, very careful with the foot because there is no bone bruise that lasts a month and a half. And that's how long he's been fighting this. He's a big guy, explosive. And defensive linemen, especially defensive end, you have to watch them because typically they never land on 2 feet. They have 1 foot turning the corner, and all that pressure they put on their foot joints, like, I would be slower to come back than to try to rush this type of injury. This is bad news for the Chargers.
All right, we'll end with the Dallas Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott has posted 274 rushing yards, tied for most, but he has yet to carry the ball 20 times in a game. Yesterday, Zeke said, quote, "You can't run the ball if you're down by 17 points. CeCe, should the Cowboys be giving Zeke a heavier workload to fix their struggling offense?
Yes, and you can run the ball if you're down 17 points. That's the only way you're going to be able to come back with the Dallas Cowboys.
So the opposite of what he said.
Absolutely.
And by the way, see? They've never been down. They've been down 17 points 5 minutes the whole year.
Yeah, the reason why he's saying he's trying to take care of his boy. He don't want Dak to look bad and everything. I understand what you're saying. So that's not your reality, all right? They should run him. He should touch the ball 25 times a game. If they're going to win, you have to. We just can't keep analyzing teams and everything and forget, like, you can't play without a theme. Like, you can't have a mode of how you're going to operate on NFL Sundays. If not, you know what the defense dictates to you, and you end up doing what the defense makes you do. Compared to good offenses, you watch the Rams tonight. They're going to force the Vikings to do what they want them to do. That's what you want as an offense. I'm going to force you. The best Dallas Cowboys teams that I've ever seen, we knew they were running the ball. We knew they were going to throw it to Michael Irvin, and when they was tired of it, they were going to throw it to Jay Novacek, and then when they got tired of that, they was going to run Emmitt at us again. We knew it was coming. Larry Allen historically used to go to the offensive line and be like, when he did that, they were running behind him. You would think, well, why would anyone do that? Larry Allen, Hall of Fame. Emmitt, Hall of Fame. Troy, Hall of Fame. Michael, Hall of Fame. But they had a style. All the teams that do it and do it well, they have a style. New England, their style is to adapt from week to week and to highlight the attributes of their players on offense compared to having them do things that they can't do. So when you look at this, the Dallas Cowboys, they don't have a theme because it should be Ezekiel Elliott. We should be saying, are they going to ruin Zeke's career? That should be the question.
Yes.
Is he going to have 400 carries? Those should be the questions should be coming out of Dallas right now because he's your best chance to win week in and week out.
Jenna, did you say in the lead he leads the NFL in rushing yards?
Yes.
Leads the NFL in rushing yards.
By accident.
At 16 attempts a game. So he's rushed the ball 48 times for 274 yards. So he's over 5.5 a carry. He's leading the league in rushing yards. Contrary to what he said, I mean, in their week one loss to Carolina, Carolina scored 16 total points. Tough to ever be down 17 in that game. Week two, they beat the Giants. And Seattle, briefly, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, had a 17-point lead for about 5 minutes.
Yes.
Then the Cowboys got right back in it. How? Oh, a Zeke touchdown. Like, I mean, come on. This is, I get it, and maybe he's just being a good teammate.
He's just being a good teammate.
But what you said there is spot on. Zeke is on pace for 1,400 yards on 16 carries a game.
Without trying.
The idea that the Cowboys, if we're going to talk this much, and they're going to talk this much, about the offense not having any answers, we'll go to the most obvious answer at least once and see if that's the right answer. It's claiming you're locked out of the house without ever trying to turn the key. Like, just go ahead and see if the best player on your team, giving him the ball a lot, will help you move the football.
Nick, give Cowboys fans your predictions for Zeke before the season started.
Before the Travis Frederick injury, but I thought their path to the playoffs was 2,000
yards. 2,000
yards. And even after the Travis Frederick, I said, you still got to try to get him there.
Yep, 1,800.
1,800. Right now, again, you know how hard it is to be on pace for 1,400 yards while being on pace at 16 carries a game? He's on pace for less than 300 carries, but over 1,400 yards. That's comedy. That's how good he is, even though he's facing 8-man boxes. What's happening, I think, to the Cowboys is other teams are lining up defensively in a formation that for every team in the league would be like, well, we have to pass.
Yes.
We have to pass. And they are forcing, they're almost mentally tricking them. We're making it look so they have to pass to where they're going to feel like we're crazy if we don't pass.
Because they've done it for 3 weeks.
What does it say about our faith in Dak if in this formation we don't pass? What it should say is, you know what? You're not going to make me do something I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to pass the balls the way they should think. I want to run Zeke until you show me you can stop him. So, try it week four. It's been 3 weeks of this. Try it week four.
I like it. It's all good. Moving on to the Saints now, and one of the reasons they've been so good offensively this year, quarterback Drew Brees. Another reason, Michael Thomas, the wideout, had an insane three-game stretch leading the NFL in receptions and yards so far this year. But as with most very good athletes, he wants more, he wants better, he wants it all. Thomas told Bleacher Report, I'm trying to go for that number one spot. At the end of the day, I'm going to be history, and no one can erase history. Just pay attention. I will leave it at that. Pay attention. Nick, how good can Michael Thomas be? He's the one guy we've really been talking about consistently
since
the start of the season.
Way better than I ever thought he could be coming out of Ohio State when there was a half dozen wide receivers taken ahead of him, when he was considered a good but not great player, at least in my eyes. I think a lot of draft people's eyes. Guy that runs about a 4.6. He's got really good size, but he's not super explosive. We talk about the Chiefs and the Dolphins and all their spark scores and 4.3 this and their just shuttle time that. But what he's done this year, just building off his first 2 years with absurd reception numbers, he's now, to answer your question, putting himself in the discussion to be the best receiver in the league. And I couldn't. Some of these quotes he gave in this story, I then went back and read a story that where he was profiled before the season. And before the season, he said, I'm trying to be the best receiver in football. And now he's saying, I'm trying to be the best receiver ever. And it reminded me, see, of a story you told me that you did with young players, either rookie camp or it was something. You were retired talking to young players. And you brought a wide receiver up and you said, I'm going to give you for your career 60 touchdowns and 600 catches. Would you take it? The guy said, yeah, I'd take it, I'd take it. Brings up another guy. I'm going to give you 70 touchdowns. I think you're a little bit better than him. And I on 600 catches. Would you take it? Yeah, I'd take it. Well, guess what? I just split my career, Chris Carter's, in half. Aim higher. Try to be better. Don't set your standard here. Set it here. And Michael Thomas is setting his standard here. And I think, and quietly, I mean, he's caught 38 out of 40 balls this year. He's been the breakout star of the season.
Go ahead.
Mike, I've been knowing Mike since he was younger. He's also the nephew of Keyshawn Johnson. Keyshawn and I worked together for a long period of time. So Mike's been around professional football. He's one of those professional athletes that he's always wanted to be a pro. Even though he wasn't the best, he was not a five-star recruit. He didn't just dominate high school football. It was a struggle for him. And struggle living in the shadow of Keyshawn and everything. Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator for Atlanta Falcons, recalled the story when Keyshawn brought him when he was a head coach in Washington. Keyshawn brought him up there to a camp, and they timed him in the 40. He ran 4.9. And Sark was like, man, I can't use him, Key. And he's like, man, I saw him. He went to prep school. Then I saw him playing at Ohio State. And I was like, Keyshawn, why didn't you tell me? The guy was going to be a late bloomer and everything. And even Keyshawn or myself didn't know that Mike would be this good. He has, and I don't like to do this, but he has a lot of the same attributes that helped me be successful in college and from transferring from college to pro football. And he will be a lot better pro than he was in college because he is a late bloomer. But he is a gym rat. He is an unbelievably smart football player. Sean Payton can move him all over the offense. He doesn't know as much offense as Drew Brees. But the volume of offense and what they can trust him with week in and week out, he's also a guy that takes advantage of every opportunity. You don't have to throw him the ball 60 times for him to catch 30. As you can see, he's got 40 targets
and 38 catches.
It's almost impossible because he's not a guy that creates a lot of separation. Most of his catches are challenged or the defender's going to be very close because he doesn't have rare quickness. He doesn't have short area quickness that I talk about with slot receivers, but he's very effective in the slot because he has great releases. He's strong. He's tenacious. And he wants the football. When the ball is in the air, there's a difference of, okay, I ran a route. I was able to separate, but there is a inside in the wide receiver where I want it more than him. And he wants to be better. He loves the competition. Him and Marshawn Lattimore, they have some battles at practice. The Saints wish. If Marshawn Lattimore practiced like Michael does, he would continue. You would see the consistent play compared to the inconsistent play. So he's a lot like Larry Fitzgerald was when he was at a young age. He just doesn't play the game as well as Larry off the ground. But when you look at what he does, his attributes, how he gets open, and Nick, 90%, 99% of all the players in the NFL, they need a system. Him being with Drew Brees and Sean Payton is going to lead to him being great. And when Michael talked about being the number one, he talked about being the number one receiver in football now. I don't believe that he's talking about being better than Jerry Rice. I believe he's talking about being considered the best in football right now.
You sort of glossed over the fact that he has some of the attributes that remind him of you. But I've never heard you even compare anyone young right now to the player that you were. Why do you think he reminds me of the guy you were?
Well, because I was a great athlete, but there were greater athletes. There were athletes that were taller. There were athletes that were faster. But Michael's ability to be able to catch the ball at the most critical points when it's contested in the slot, he's not afraid to get hit. Those were the type of things that I love football. I love when I made a mistake, correcting it, and the coach, you know, being able to get on my back and me to be able to get that right finally for him. Michael has a lot of that in him. Man, Sean Payton and the front office, man, they're so thrilled with him. Only a second-round pick from Ohio State. As you said, half dozen guys drafted in front of them, none of them better than him.
And the other comparison, some of them are simple in this regard. Very similar height.
Yes.
He's a little bit taller than
yep.
you. same weight going into the NFL, right around 212. He's now up to about 220. Around the same 40 time.
Yes.
Both around 4'6 guys. Both Ohio State with athletic families. Mm-hmm. Your brother played in the NBA. His uncle was number one pick in the draft. Like, all those reasons. And the things that Chris did best and the thing he does best is apprehend the football.
Yes.
Is not. He said he thinks he can recount every drop he's had in his life. Now, that's probably overstating it, but his point is, you throw it to me, I'm going to catch it. And the catch percentage, I just want people to know how absurd it is. There's only five guys in a season who have ever caught 90% of the balls thrown to them. 90. They're all running backs. Because the ball travels. The only receiver.
The longer the ball stays in the air, the harder it is to catch.
No receiver's ever been over 82%. He's at 95%. Now, we're only three games in. I get that. That will come down. But there's only eight guys who have ever caught 120 balls in a year. You did it twice. AB's done it a couple times. Mm-hmm. If he stays healthy, he's going to get to 120. And if he stays healthy, he could set the catch record this year. He could break the 143.
Yeah, I tracked when I tied the NFL record in 94 with 122. He went into this game with 28, which is NFL record, two games. He topped that. Now he has 36, which is NFL
38.
Record.
38. He has 38.
And, because he had 10 in the game. But I tracked mine. Dusty tracked mine. In that season, 1994, at the same point, I had 11 catches.
Right.
I had 11 catches. So he's off to a tremendous start.
And Drew Brees has to get some of the credit for that as well.
It's the perfect combination.
Great combination.
If you have a receiver that's not going to drop passes, and you have the most accurate quarterback in NFL history on a completion percentage basis, and a team that's going to have to throw a lot because the defense ain't that good, you're going to have some opportunities.
And they got that one thing. It's called trust. Drew trusting. Good story.
All right, I got to take a break now. Coming up, wait till you hear how Big Ben describes the Steelers-Ravens rivalry. That's next. This is First Things First. Back with Chris Candy now. Chris, a rivalry is a rivalry regardless of records. This week, Steelers and Ravens. Ben Roethlisberger coming off a great performance Monday night, leading the Steelers to their first win of the year. Joe Flacco is still Joe Flacco. And yet this will still be a grudge match. Big Ben didn't
sugarcoat. I thought maybe my man Lamar Jackson. That would have been a trick.
Right? Big Ben didn't sugarcoat the rivalry, saying after playing the Ravens, quote, you feel like you've been in about five or six car wrecks. Oof. Kenny, you played for the Ravens. What's this rivalry like?
Well, I had the opportunity to be in this rivalry for 3 years, and it is the best rivalry in pro football. It ain't even close. But I remember after those games with the Steelers, you had to crawl to the bathroom the next morning just because you couldn't walk. You were that sore. So, I mean, that's what you can expect. There aren't a whole lot of tricks between these two teams. Ain't no state secrets. They know each other, and it's just going to be a physical battle for four quarters. And the team that's able to overcome the adversity that's inevitably going to happen in that game, they're going to give themselves the best chance to win.
And people say, well, why are these games so much more physical? For one, it's the style for which they both play. And coming into this game, Pittsburgh has always been known as a rugged organization. Now, they've gotten a little away from that on the offensive side. But when they play Baltimore, I mean, it's a fist fight. Now, they might throw some passes, but it is a fist fight. And because you know each team, you know both teams so well that the plays, you recognize them so you can play faster. So you can anticipate, you can do things in these type of games that you can't do because you don't know what they're doing. You're guessing more in the other games. So that allows a different level of intensity with you being so familiar with it. But these are two teams that legitimately don't like each other. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been on the field before NFL games, and there's a rivalry. I was at the Saints and the Falcons game. There's a rivalry there. Like, it's bitter, but they don't hate each other. They call it hate week, but it's not like Pittsburgh and in Baltimore. Like, you're going to see a different level from the players. Before the game, it's totally different. After the game, it's totally different. Most of the time after the game is, I can't wait till we see you guys again. So it's kind of a throwback, not NFL that we're typically used to seeing. And it's kind of refreshing for me because I got drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. And, man, we used to go down the turnpike, go up the turnpike, the New York football Giants.
Yep.
And, man, that was the rivalry that we had. And we had a great rivalry with the Dallas Cowboys. So I grew up in the NFC East, so I really appreciate, and also my college days, I appreciate a great rivalry game.
You mentioned college, obviously, against Michigan, but then also in the Vikings. The Vikings, Vikings-Bears and Vikings-Packers are mm-hmm. two. I mean, the NFC North has these as well. I will say this. If this a typical Baltimore-Pittsburgh game, the one you're describing, that benefits Baltimore
No doubt.
Because of how these teams are built in 2018. Mm. The Steelers don't have the mauling defense they once did. Right now, the defense is trying to hold on to the rope. The Steelers don't have, in my eyes, a reliable running game right now. The Steelers, despite the colors on the jersey, they want to play a finesse type of football. You know who they want to play with? The Saints and the Falcons. Let's go indoors. Yeah. Let's throw it around. Yeah. Let's try to go outscore you.
Right.
Baltimore, I know Flacco had that awesome week one game, and they won last week, but in week two and three, Flacco started to look more like the Joe Flacco I know so well. And so
that's what Jenna was talking
exactly
about.
Exactly. Right.
Joe Flacco.
It's back to Joe Flacco.
And so if you're Baltimore, you want it to be a game, a lot of penalties, mucked it up. You know what I mean? Where it is a running defensive game. Pittsburgh is trying to say, we think we can score 31 on anybody, and we want to see if you can hang with us. Now, Pittsburgh couldn't do that against Cleveland. Right? Like Cleveland. Now, part of that was the half dozen turnovers.
Yeah.
But Cleveland was able to muck that game up. Mm-hmm. That's the game plan Baltimore needs to be looking to. How can we keep this game low scoring? Because a low scoring game, in my eyes, benefits the Ravens, because I don't think they can keep up with Pittsburgh's weapons through the air.
Well, I don't think the Ravens are going to have the benefit the Browns did in week one with 40 mile an hour wind gusts and torrential rains.
Yep.
But in looking at this, you're absolutely right, Nick, especially being down your number one corner in Jimmy Smith. The Ravens want to find a way to be able to slow this game down. But they don't have that reliable run game themselves. I mean, we're talking about the Steelers without Lev Bell and David DeCastro, but the Ravens haven't set the world on fire in terms of being able to rush the football with Alex Collins. So I look at that Joe Flacco that we saw on the road on a short week in Cincinnati, and if he's going to play like that, two interceptions, four sacks, and have your team down 21-0 after one quarter of football, then the Ravens have no shot in this game. You saw what the Steelers did last week. They came out with their foot on the gas on Monday night against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And guess what? Even though their defense can't stop a nosebleed, they were able to be opportunistic and have four takeaways. And that's the difference. Pittsburgh is going to have to be a bend but don't break unit defensively. And they know if they're able to steal possessions offensively with the playmakers that they have, Tony Totap and, of course, Juju Smith-Schuster, they're going to be able to put up a lot of points, and Baltimore ultimately can't match scores with them. So that's the kind of complexion that benefits the Steelers, and that's what the Baltimore Ravens have to be able to avoid. They got to take care of the football. They got to be able to establish a ground game, make it physical, and shorten the game. That's the only shot they got going into Heinz Field.
Last week was the first week we really saw that Pittsburgh offense kind of come together without having Le'Veon Bell on the field. Is that the offense you expect to see now moving forward, or did everything just sort of happen right for Ben Roethlisberger?
No, I think that's the offense that we can expect to see moving forward. And I think their offensive coordinator is starting to get a feel for how to utilize his personnel, even without Le'Veon Bell. One of the plays that comes to mind was Antonio Brown's touchdown catch. If you look at that formation, they had a quad set. And so they had two tight ends, a wide receiver, and the running back offset to Ben Roethlisberger's left. And then that forces the linebackers to boss over, and that forces the safeties to rotate down to that three receiver side. Well, guess what? Antonio Brown's in one-on-one coverage, and they just threw the ball out there. He made one guy miss, and as off he goes, he's in the end zone. I look for them to try to create those matchups with the guys in the Baltimore Ravens secondary, because without Jimmy Smith, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, they'll take advantage of one-on-one coverage and make some big plays happen.
Yeah, Ben's got to be excited going against this Baltimore defense, the emergence of Vance McDonald there as a speed tight end. You add that to what Juju Smith-Schuster is doing, it should be exciting. Ben, I believe, is looking to build on what he did last week and kind of dissect this defense, the Ravens defense, that is not the Ravens with Ray Lewis defense.
And it could be if they have a good offensive game. Remember, they put up 37 in a loss to Kansas City. So the offense was not the problem in week two for Pittsburgh. And then last week they scored 30 in the first half.
All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, can the Vikings slow down the Rams on Thursday Night Football? Today is Thursday. We get to see that tonight. That's next up, First Things First. Thursday nights are about to get a lot bigger as Fox becomes the new network home for Thursday Night Football. It is the Vikings and the Rams in a battle of NFC heavyweights. Tonight at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, also live on NFL Network and streaming
on Prime Video. Now it's the game. Is that our tagline?
It is.
So awesome. Back here on First Things First.
Jenna, you've been saying it all week. You think they've just been adding it to the script?
I do.
In that one moment?
Yeah.
Now it's a game. They put it
Nick
now it's a game.
Nick and I thought that you had come up with that.
Yeah, I mean.
I keep looking on the screen.
Like, now it's a game.
I want to see it on the screen.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Let's break down said game, the one that it is now. Big measuring stick for two of the best teams in the NFC. Vikings have a very good defense and some issues on offense. Rams have a very good offense and some injuries on defense. Kenny, how does the Rams offense attack this Vikings defense?
I think the Rams offense attacks this Vikings defense like they attack any other defense, and that's through Todd Gurley. And you look at what he brings to the table. He's averaging over 120 yards from scrimmage per game. He's got 5 touchdowns on the season. You have to make him the focal point of your game plan just based on what the Vikings defense wants to do. It's a defense that wants to make you one-dimensional. Now, they're going to be without Everson Griffin, and that's a big loss for them. Okay, that's 44.5 sacks span in the last 5 seasons.
Wow.
That's a lot of production that you're going to be missing from that defensive front. So if I'm Sean McVay, my plan is to make sure that Todd Gurley gets the ball early and often in that game. So that opens up everything for everybody else. When you look at Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks, that's where you create those opportunities for chunk yardage in the passing game. When that defense has to drop an extra defender down to the line of scrimmage to guard against Todd Gurley, whether it's the run game or the pass game, that creates one-on-one opportunities elsewhere. And there's a reason why Jared Goff is third in the NFL in net passing yards per attempt. So, I mean, that's a lot of yardage that they're picking up in those situations. They're taking advantage of play action, but it all starts with Todd Gurley setting the table.
And that's what the Rams were not able to do in this matchup last year.
Yes.
Todd Gurley had his worst game of the year last year against the Vikings. The Rams offense, they scored a touchdown on their opening drive.
Early, yes.
And did not score again. I mean, they scored a touchdown with 10.5 minutes left in the first quarter to get to 7, and they ended at 7. I don't think that's going to be a problem for the Rams this year, not only because they haven't had that type of problem in any game this year, but they don't have 3 and outs. We were talking about this before the show. 7% of their drives this year have ended in a 3 and out. No other team is less than 20. They are averaging 1 3 and out per game. A lot of that is Todd Gurley. Like, they are having elongated drives. And you know what that also helps? Their defense. Their defense almost never is having to go out to the sideline, get some oxygen or get some water, and then go right back out there. They're getting to be rested. So this Rams offense presents so many problems for every team, right? The way that the Vikings, I would imagine, would be able to attack it is the way they attempt to attack every offense, which is get pressure with their 4. It's going to be tougher without Everson Griffin. Mm-hmm. And to not have to send big blitzes, even though Zimmer likes to send them occasionally. Mm-hmm. That way you can rely on more guys in coverage. But there's no easy solution to this Rams offense with as many A-level weapons that they have.
I think the one thing the Rams in attacking these Vikings is they should expect the Vikings team from last season compared to the team they saw last week on film. Canty will tell you, man, there are some games where you know you are playing against a physical team and you watch them on film and be like, wow, that's not them. And then you kind of get tricked. You're like, oh, they're not that good. Haven't been that good. Against Green Bay, their defense was not that good. Against Aaron, against Buffalo, man, they were the worst we've seen them. Like, maybe they're not. No, they still have a good defense, so make sure you give them that proper respect going into the game, especially on a short week. Anytime a professional and their pride has been hurt, like, they end up bouncing back. We saw it last week, Nick. Week number 2 was the week of
desperate teams, man.
The desperate teams, bro. That's what – if you look at the results of it, like, the desperate teams pulled the big upsets, and that's what caught the Vikings by surprise there against Buffalo. The other thing – that if they're going to attack this Vikings defense, what they have to not forget, and it's not something that they normally think about, they got to think about their own defense.
Mm-hmm.
They got to think that, man, we don't have our elite corners. We don't have the ability.
Yep.
So Brian Billick used to try to do this sometime when we were prolific at scoring. He said, I'm going to try to slow score. I'm going to try to score slow.
Yeah.
Then Randy Moss take 150, and Randy Moss be like, hey, homie, what you want me to do? So they can score the ball so fast, but they put that defense back on the field. Now, we know they're not going to have Talib. They're not going to have Peters out there. So there are games where you have to go into it. Yeah, we want to be good offensively, but we want to be able to milk the clock, which I do believe leads to Todd Gurley's highest productivity and the amount of touches he gets this ball in at the season high.
I want to ask you about the two quarterbacks. So Jared Goff came in, and you said this, Nick, earlier. As long as he cannot be worse than he was last year, they're going to be fine. So just manage everything. Mm-hmm. He's exceeded expectations. Yes. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins came in, and you thought, well, he's going to be an upgrade from what Case Keenum was. As long as he is the guy that we paid him for, he's going to be fine. And I think our expectations now are maybe are a little bit off. They've teetered a little bit on both of them because Jared Goff has been good, and Kirk Cousins has been good, but not quite the explosive he sort was, of upgrade that
Kirk
we thought
was bad
he was
in the Buffalo
be.
Game. I thought Kirk was very good against the Packers. Yeah, I know that's the reason why that the Vikings were able to tie that football
yes.
game. Now, maybe you can argue the defense should have been better against a hampered Aaron Rodgers so they get a win instead of a tie. But I feel like Kirk's only played poorly once.
I'm going to tell you my initial reaction because it flashed on our board. When I was calling the game, we have the scores and they flash like mm-hmm. when you had a scoring alert. That thing flashed like three times. I thought the dude was point shaving or something. I said, what's going on? I mean, because I couldn't see it. So I had to go back and watch it and been like, oh, he was back to old cuz in Washington because he did that in Washington. So that Kurt, we did transfer him, but some of the Washington came to Minnesota.
I get it. But it's almost a little unfair just judging Kirk Cousins on the performance that they had last week. I mean, they run six plays on offense and they're down 17-0. So, I mean, the complexion of that game completely changed.
Judge even on that fourth quarter in overtime against Green Bay.
Yes, sir, when he had that pass to Adam Thielen.
Yes.
That's the throw that you pay $84 million right. in guaranteed money for, being able to make that throw in that situation. But, CC, you mentioned it. Their pride is a little hurt in Minnesota. Their ego is bruised.
Oh, yes.
They flew out there a day early just to get prepared, get adjusted
yep.
to the time.
Yep.
But this is
going to
be a group that's going to give the Rams their best punch right now. So the Rams have to understand what they're walking into in this game tonight.
And
this is going to be a desperate Minnesota Vikings team. Their season is on the line right now. When you look at what the Bears are doing and what inevitably the Packers are going to do this season, you have to worry a little bit about trying to make it and qualify for the postseason. It's got to start with this game tonight.
And I know Minnesota can't look past a game again. They're certainly not going to look past this game.
No.
But what I can say when you say they're desperate, their season's on the line, they are in Philly next week. So it's not like all of a sudden, okay, Minnesota, if they drop this game, they can get it even next week. They're going to be a heavy underdog next week. I want to ask you guys one question, your opinion on this, if there's any impact. Who was Kirk Cousins' offensive coordinator for his first 2 years as the starting quarterback in Washington? It was Sean McVay. Is there anything that McVay can bring, even though he's worried about the offense, to those defensive meetings leading up to this game as far as helping out that team about tendencies or anything from his experience having coached Kirk Cousins?
If they were in Washington, I would say yes, because they're running the same system. With DeFilippo being the offensive coordinator there in Minnesota, there's certain things. But I think Kurt has established himself as a regular 4,000-yard passer, mm-hmm. that there's not a whole bunch of intel outside of what everyone knows yes. about Kirk Cousins. He better be concerned about those wide receivers on the outside in Thielen and Diggs. Thielen, 300-yard games in three games. Diggs, we know, can explode at any time. So I think that's more of the concern, that chemistry that he's developed with that young wide receiving core.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.